So may we have a roll call, please?
Director Bates?
Here.
Director Johnson?
Here.
Director Sweeney?
Here.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Very well. All right,
let's do the pledge.
Well, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, we will now proceed to public comment. This is a period of time in our meeting when we have the opportunity to hear from the public. If there is anyone here, we do not have any cards, do we? All righty. No one has signed in, but is there anyone here who would like to speak? Now is the time. Hold your peace till the next meeting. Hearing nothing, we will presume that there is no public comment, and we will proceed to our next item, which is approval of the minutes of our meeting on September 14, 2015. Everybody should have received a copy of those. I would entertain a motion to present to approve them as presented.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, moved and seconded. Is there any discussion or questions or changes? Hearing nothing, may we all those in favor of approving the minutes as presented, state aye.
Aye.
Opposed. All right, the minutes are approved. I will now turn the meeting over to Mr. Bedloff, who is going to, we have a couple of presentations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This morning we have two matters for your consideration. The first is what we are commonly referring to as our excess right-of-way and annexation policies. Technical term is, I'm told, the excess real property declaration and disposal policy. Rocco Zuccaro, our Deputy Chief of Engineering, will present the final recommendations for these policies. These recommendations follow public review of the proposed changes to allow local communities, planning agencies, and others the opportunity to comment. The proposed updates will allow the tollway to more effectively sell or transfer unneeded parcels of land. At the same time, our updated policies will stimulate economic development by making this land available for development by others, which hopefully will help create jobs, expand the tax base in our local communities, and maximize land no longer deemed required by the tollway. Rocco, the floor is yours.
Can I do the presentation here up front? Does it matter?
I think you have the microphone purposes.
All right. All right. Thank you very much, and good morning. Happy second Monday of the week.
That's the whole Wednesday being a holiday comment. Reminding people that he didn't work yesterday.
Otherwise known as two Fridays. This is a very brief recap of some of the things that I've covered in prior meetings. This actually discussion has been going on for a year plus about the policy, or is it at least about a year? So the tollway has authorization to get rid of excess right-of-way through the Toll Highway Act and the Trust Inventory. These are just the statutes that give us this authorization. I'm going to briefly go through some of these. So our existing policy that we have for declaring excess right-of-way and annexation, I would say at best it's a little bit clunky. It's not totally written down. It's really guided by both the Toll Highway Act and the Trust Indenture, and it's been pretty much reactive based on any requests that we get from private entities, government entities. So it's always been more of a reactive process, and it's never really been really clear to those who are requesting about excess right-of-way, how the process goes, the timelines and whatnot, what is necessary. And we do dispose of excess right-of-way. We really haven't gotten rid of much in the last couple of years, given our capital program and our needs for all of our right-of-way today. But we're at that point in time where we've acquired a lot of land, and there's some opportunities to start looking at what we have and what we need and what we don't need and how we can maybe use some of our land in better ways to support the public. So we wanted to develop a formal policy. So what was provided to you is an update that's really a culmination of a year-long process and maybe even goes back a little bit longer than that, where we've been talking to a lot of different communities, like I said. Really a lot of credit goes out to Carrie O'Brien and Bob Lane, who work in the Land Acquisition Department and Legal Department, respectively. They've done a lot of work to develop the policy. As I said, what you see in front of you today is more of a proactive policy intended to address the concerns expressed to us over years about how we go about the acquisition of property. The policy is based on a lot of research. We researched about a dozen plus different toll agencies and state DOTs to get a sense of what their best practices are, how they dispose of excess right-of-way. And so staff developed a draft review. I'm kind of going through the process that we go through so you understand how far we've come and where we are today, and I'll get to some of this. So we developed the draft policy. We wanted to make sure, like we do with all of our policies, that we get public input. So we developed the draft, put it out for public comment back in March. It went out for a 60-day public comment period. Typically, we do about a 30-day public comment period to this one. We thought it's a little bit more detailed. We want to have the right amount of time, so we put it out for 60 days. We received some feedback from a couple different counties, from some communities that we had been working with. We, again, proactively trying to engage some discussion about the policy to make sure it fits with what we need and how it could best adapt to some of the community concerns and issues. So after our public comment period expired at the end of May, we received, I'm going to say again, about 6 to 10 comments on both the excess right-of-way and annexation policies. And then what we did after that is we sat down with the commenting agencies to talk about what their comments were and how we might adapt our policy to address their comments. So really what you see today is that culmination of the last several months of work. The policy is reflective of what we have done over the last several years through declaration of excess right-of-way. It's reflective of the comments that we received from different public entities. It reflects some comments that we received through the Customer Service and Planning Committee. I think we started our first discussion with them again back in maybe February, March of this year. So we received some comments. We also received some additional comments at the last meeting. So again, it's a culmination of a lot of the stuff that's coming together. So what you see is what we are hoping to be declared as a final policy. Let me tell you a little bit about what is in the policy and how we've changed the policy a little bit. As I said, it reflects a lot of that feedback that we received over the years. The intent of the policy is to be flexible and really to support local governments. We'll have opportunities to support local governments, economic development, local government needs. So it kind of gave local governments more of a priority consideration as we move forward. We want to make sure it's a very clear and documented process to those who request access right-of-way for us. So it's, again, it's written, it's formalized, the process, the procedures, how we will review each request. The information that we want out of each request is how the right-of-way is to be used, how it is a benefit to the public, talk about some economic development benefits if we do convey the right-of-way over. But we put the onus of that on top of the requesting agency to tell us how it is in the best interest or how they're going to use the property. As we do with all access requests, we'll assess the impact on the tollway, we'll look at the traffic operations, any proposed land use, what do we need today, what might we need in the future as far as that land goes. So if we have an identified need or a local community has an identified need, we could carve out portions of the land. If somebody has a need for a traffic signal, local community, or if we need to use it for construction, we'll hold off on that. Again, the economic impact analysis. One of the comments that we received at the last meeting here, there was a bit of a discussion between Director Banks and Director Johnson about billboards and, you know, the flat-out restriction. We've made some modifications to the paragraph. It's actually Section 10 of the policy to basically state that it's not a flat-out restriction. It's a limitation on where billboards can go. There are opportunities through the Highway Beautification Act and the Illinois codes to clearly define where billboards might be able to be located. Across the interstate system, there's local controls about where billboards can be located. So instead of saying a straight-out restriction, we said there's limitations as long as the billboard complies with the state and federal laws and local zoning requirements. A billboard could be allowed pending the chief engineer approval. Ultimately, Paul will have to review the billboard location, Paul or his predecessor. We hope it's you, Paul, many years to come.
Predecessor?
Successor.
The other way.
Right. Yeah. I don't know anybody else but Paul. The others didn't matter, Paul. Paul ultimately will have their chief engineer has the ultimate review to make sure the billboard does not interfere with safe travel across our roadway. So that was another one of the changes that we just made to the policy. So again, it's reflective of a lot of the comments, the feedback, a lot of work from a lot of different people. So hopefully what we hope to have happen is ultimately the policy being approved, I believe, by this committee and then go to the board. If it is approved, we'll distribute the policy to all those commenting agencies through the councils of mayors or the local governments to put it out there. Right now, we've got about 10 pending requests for access right-of-way, so that'll allow us, again, to start proceeding with some of those. So that's really more of an advance notice that you'll start seeing some of these requests coming to the board for approval over the next year or so. So, again, get those the backlog moving again. But then we'll also start doing a proactive assessment of the access right-of-way that we have for both the 294-57 interchange project and the Elgin O'Hare Western Access Project. As we start wrapping those projects up, we'll evaluate what we need and what may be deemed excess.
Brackel?
Yeah.
How do we deal with the excess property? Does somebody come to us and ask us, hey, would you sell us that particular parcel, or do we list it, for lack of a better term?
Right now, we wait for people to come to us on the excess right away. On Elgin O'Hare, we might, on these projects, again, what we want to do is look to see what do we really have. We might want to go out a little bit more proactive to say this could be declared excess.
How would someone find that out?
I mean, we would have to put it out by a legal notice.
But I mean,
do anything.
For someone to approach you, they really have to know that a particular parcel is owned by the authority and that it's excess, right?
That's typically how it has been, yes. We'll have a fence around the property. And the fence, you can see across the fence line, nothing is happening. And it doesn't seem to be used. Nobody's ever out there maintaining it or whatever it might be. Because all of our right-of-way is already fenced off. So that's somebody would have to know to say, hey, whose property is that? They ask the local community whose it is. And that's how the process is typically started. A lot of it really does start at the local government side, though. As we do these projects, you know, we're talking to every community about what's happening, and they know what land we're acquiring, and a lot of them know in advance what they may want to see on that property. So that's
good example is Naperville. There's the on-off ramp right there. Mm-hmm. I'm probably making you nervous talking about this, aren't I? But there's three property owners. The tollway's one of them. We have a salt dome, and I think we own about 11 acres there. Mm-hmm. It's been the gateway to Naperville for a long time. Naperville is very, very familiar with it. And the county owns 4 or 5 acres, and there's a private developer that owns about another 8. And it's a highly desirable parcel for, you know, economic development. Yeah. So, you know, Naperville has had interest. The county has had interest, and the whole world knows we own it. So it's a perfect example of we're not really using, it's not the highest and best use of the parcel. And so there is a movement to you know, so this would apply to that. And I think more often than not, this would probably be applicable to, you know, bigger parcels that we don't need that can be consolidated with others. Of course, there might be, you know, small parcels that for private entities, things like that. I think part of the genesis of this is that we never really had a policy, and so, you know, these issues come up. We don't really know how to address it, so this is a shot at that.
I think it's a good idea.
Speaking about that now, because some of the parcels you've had for a number of years, my question is this: if you're going to start getting out there, would you first approach the local communities or government entities before you go out with the public and say, hey, by the way, we've got these parcels here, we've deemed them VXS, we want to make you aware of it? I mean, in other words, could you talk about you want government, go up with government first? In other words, almost give the government the first crack.
Right.
If you have to, is that something?
That's what a lot of the discussion that we had with the government agencies as we were developing the policy, that was one of the things that they really wanted to see happen. We didn't call it really a right of first refusal, but it's giving them the opportunity to say what interest do they have, if any, on the property. Because it could be, you know, there could be a large piece of land, and maybe the county, DOT, wants a strip of it for a traffic signal, or whatever it may be, or if they have a bigger development in mind. So, yes, the policy is proactive in that sense that we do work with the local government, getting their buy-in on this as a
and also use of it. What kind of use is going to go into it?
Right.
Because once you sell it, you know, make sure it's the use that's conducive to the community, the government, the county, or whatever they set right. So that is in there.
That was a lot of the stuff that was the back and forth that we went back and to make sure that, and it was a bit of a struggle because we didn't want the policy to be so darn prescriptive that
right.
you can't do anything. So we wanted to make sure there was a bit of flexibility in there too for the who knows what type of situation that may come up. But yeah, that was where we settled on making sure that there was that government ability to have the input throughout the process on what goes on and making sure that they're aware of things that go on. Again, we want to make sure, for us, economic development is great and, you know, provides more traffic revenue for our system as long as it doesn't adversely affect operations of the system. It's a good thing.
Okay.
So that's about it. So, like with all policies, you know, if it does get approved, we always monitor to see how good it is. With this one, it's, you know, something new for us. So I'd say over a 3 to 5 year period, we'll continue to monitor and see is it working, is it effective, and what needs to be changed or updated on the policy, which is, again, what we've done with pretty much all the policies that we've taken. So with that, if there's any other questions.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you, Rocco.
Thank you.
Greg?
I believe Rocco is going to stay at the podium. As soon as, and while Rocco's getting his notes for his second presentation, Mr. Chairman, if I may, since we at the FAO committee meeting earlier this week, we were pleased to introduce our new Inspector General to the board members who populated that committee, and T.J. Hingesbach. Am I going to get that right one of these days, T.J.?
T.J.
has joined us, and I would like to give, if it's okay, if it pleases the chair, to give the committee an opportunity to introduce himself to this
Please.
Committee as well.
Absolutely.
T.J.
Hi, T.J. Hingesbach. I was previously Deputy Inspector General for the City of Chicago for about 10 years. I'm very honored to be appointed Inspector General for the Toll Highway and looking forward to working with everyone here to make it increase the efficiency and effectiveness of the Toll Highway.
We're very happy to have you here. Welcome. We look forward to working with you, too. Thank you, TJ.
Thank you, TJ. Second presentation from Mr. Zaccaro centers on the Central Tri-State I-294 Corridor Planning Council update. The council is beginning to wrap up its important work to provide public input to help us develop a master plan for reconstructing the Central Tri-State Tollway. As chair of this corridor planning council, I know that the input received to date shows how important this roadway is to local communities. I was out at the last meeting in Justice earlier this week, very well attended, a lot of great input from the stakeholders. Guiding principles adopted from this council frame a vision, a shared vision for improvements that benefit all users in the corridor. Rocco and his team have now identified the top priorities for issues these improvements should address, and Rocco will walk you through these priorities for this very, very important Move Illinois project. Rocco.
Thank you. So we've made a tremendous amount of progress over the past 4 months with the Corridor Planning Council. A lot of that, again, credit goes with should be Amy Lee over there in the corner. Has been doing a lot of tremendous work on this project. But we also have a lot of great people who have been engaged throughout the Corridor Planning Council. I'll talk a little bit about that. But this is the next major Move Illinois project, and it's really one of the most critical that we'll have in the coming years. Just kind of a brief recap. So the Central Tri-State Corridor, it's a 22.3-mile corridor from about 95th Street down here in Oklahoma, Hickory Hills, all the way up to Balmoral Avenue, which is in the Rosemont Corridor. So it's an extensive corridor for us. It's currently planned for construction between 2020 through 2022. We've got $1.7 billion in the Move Illinois program for this project. We're looking at some opportunities to maybe do some advanced construction to tie in up at the north end here, which is where the Elgin O'Hare Western Bypass, actually the Western Bypass will come up over here, so there might be some advanced contracts that we look at. Getting this corridor ready to start construction by as soon as 2018. So there's a lot of work that is happening and will continue to happen. So to help out with this, we convene a corridor planning council. We've done this before to some success, some really good success on the I-90 corridor, so we thought we'd take that same playbook and move it again. Some stats about the Central Tri-State, just to keep this in mind. So the Tri-State as a whole, the 80-plus mile corridor of the Tri-State accounts for about 45% of all of the tollway revenue comes from the Tri-State. The Central Tri-State is one of the busiest stretches of the entire tollway system. This accounts for about
20% of the total revenue for the entire tollway system. So 45% of all revenue comes from the tri-state, about 20% of the revenue from the entire system comes from just this this portion. So about 7% of our system accounts for about 20% of all of our revenue and traffic. There's about 360,000 daily vehicle trips that either get on or off at various points across the entire roadway. With that great amount of vehicle trips, we have some of the greatest levels of congestion across our entire system along this stretch, really primarily pretty much the whole thing. It's very directional traffic, but we're starting to see backups in the southbound direction in the afternoon as far north as Willow Road. It also carries the greatest amount of commercial vehicles on our entire tollway system. So again, a very important corridor for this system, and it really is. This project provides the opportunity for us to be a little bit more visionary about what it is that we could and should be doing. So to do this, we like we do with all projects, we initiate a master plan. The master plan contract is just getting started within the last month or so. What we'll do with the master plan, we'll explore a range of roadway improvements, what can happen through here. We'll consider opportunities for active track management, similar to what we have on the I-90 corridor. So really investing in some technology through there. We'll be looking at assessing the transit markets, what opportunities are there for transit along the corridor for us to integrate it or partner with transit. One of the major components of the project is a mile-long bridge. It's actually about 300 feet shy of a mile, so an almost a mile-long bridge. That's a major component. So what we'll be looking at is how do we optimize what we do on the mile-long to plan and for that whatever that future vision might be. But then, given all the commercial traffic, we're also looking for opportunities to improve truck parking or other freight strategies along the entire corridor. So again, to do this, we created a corridor planning council. The corridor council membership, I've gone over this before, but just a quick recap. As I said, we use this for the I-90 corridor. We developed a corridor planning council. It really worked out well. It's kind of a nice checkbook to go back and look at what the corridor planning council told us to do on I-90. And it's nice to go back and say, yes, we were able to do a lot of the things that were prescribed to us and follow through the recommendations. So it's a wide array of interests on the council, which is what we want. We want to make sure it's inclusive of all the interests that we have, from anything from environmental to the trucks, advocacy, economic development. So we've got a lot of government organizations that are sitting on it. We've got transportation agencies, IDOT, RTA, CMAP, Chicago Department of Aviation. We've got Union Pacific Railroad, Burlington Northern Railroad, and Pace all sitting with us to figure out how we can work together and leverage our work. We've got some advocacy and civic organizations like MPC and the Illinois Chamber. Freight, given, again, the importance of freight, we've got the Illinois Trucking Association, Midwest Trucking Association, and a member from the Illinois State Freight Advisory Committee all sitting on the committee, and we've got some economic development organizations sitting with us, and then environmental as well. And we didn't want to just put environmental in a box on alone. We've also had an environmental working group to really look at the broader sustainability environmental impacts of what can and should be done along the corridor. So we've got an environmental working group that feeds into this council. We've got environmental membership here as well. So, again, we just want to make sure that the environment was considered throughout. The meetings we've been doing to date, it's been kind of interesting. I've planned to make sure that they're locationally challenged meetings. We've had meetings in Northlake. We've met in Oak Brook, and we've met in Justice just this last week. And if you've ever tried to get to Northlake from the tollway or Oak Brook from the tollway or Justice from the tollway, they're all really close, within 1 to 2 miles. Good luck finding them. Good luck getting there. So we try to make sure that we've gone to some locationally challenged locations and venues. So all those along the corridor, we're dealing with everybody from a Rosemont, Hinsdale, Oak Brook, Justice, a wide variety of community interest. We want to make sure that everybody understands, gets a little flavor of what the challenges are across the entire corridor. And I think it's worked to date. I think the meeting in Justice this week was a real eye-opener for a lot of people who have never been down in Justice. So that's been one of the things that we've tried to do. So one of the first things that this group did, they adopted, created and adopted some guiding principles. Really, it's the guiding principles will be used to kind of guide everything that we do. And they looked at not just the tollway needs, but its needs of the tollway, the local governments, the businesses, logistics and freight, different transportation agency and the environment, a few things. That came out of the guiding principles. Again, this will be used to as we go through the master planning process, to make sure that we have a vision that looks for looks at both existing and future demand, so not just think so short-sighted to say what do we need today, but really look long-term. That kind of feeds into when Secretary Blankenhorn came and approached the board a couple months or so ago. Continue to be visionary on what can be done here, and don't be short-sighted. So look at what we need today, but also consider what might be needed in the future. But look for choices for all corridor users, so that's, you know, looking at the transit components and the multimodal aspects of the corridor as a whole. One thing we hear loud and clear from everybody, what everybody, you know, what really helps is travel reliability, knowing I'm going to get on a road and getting a gauge of how long it's going to take me to get from A to B. It doesn't just help as you as the commuter. It helps the business community to have that that solid sense of reliability and performance, knowing that you can get to and from your place of employment and your home easily and efficiently and reliably. So that also kind of spills into some of these economic opportunity guiding principles that were discussed and adopted. Sustainability is always a big thing, but one thing that definitely is coming clear throughout this corridor is stormwater management. It seems to be a big challenge along the entire corridor. There's a lot of flooding that happens along the corridor and in the communities themselves, so that's hindering their abilities. So what we're looking at is opportunities to address stormwater management as part of what we do, in partnership with some of the other agencies that we're dealing with on the corridor, the forest preserves, we're dealing with reclamation districts as well, MWRD and DuPage County as well. And everything that we do, there's clarity, you know, and we've made it clear, and I've said it at every meeting that we've had to the Corridor Planning Council, we've got to be financially viable in what we do. We've got a $1.7 billion budget, which is a significant amount of money, but it's never enough to do everything, so we need to be, again, thinking long-term, but also thinking realistic on what we can and do along the corridor. But there's opportunities to collaborate with other agencies, with the Department of Transportation, with the locals, the townies, to figure out how we can do that the right way. So if we set the vision, everybody could roll with that as well, and looking at addressing those future needs. Everything that we do has to be collaborative, and make sure it's a big vision for the corridor. Look at innovative solutions and ensure maximum utility of the infrastructure. So if we put pavement down, how can we use all of the pavement that we have? So those are some of the guiding principles that we had. I want to talk about maybe some of the successes that we've had in the past